Hello and welcome to Wonder Pod, episode 65. That's right, episode 65. A few years back, that meant we could have retired. Not in this economy, you'll be working until you're at least episode 80. Joining me this week, as per normal, is Glacinator.
Look, I'm a video game. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. Soundboard is back for another round. Let's see how it does this time.
Yes, we are going to continue with the soundboard until we're told to stop by the listening audience or Pat's informants or whoever. But we'll be changing it up a little bit. Also joining us is the guy I just mentioned, Patrick.
What is going on, people? Wonder Pod episode 65, enhanced with all sorts of sounds.
Yeah, well, Pamela. I told you people on Facebook I was recording in a porta potty by the highway. See, now you believe me. There's sheep in the field behind me. Pamela has its own lovely sounds too, but it crashes after like the third one, so I can't use it. Patrick, why don't you tell them what you've been playing this week?
Okay, what have I been playing? Quite a bit of stuff.
I don't know, that's why I asked.
But I think I'll just... That's right, I have to ask myself. Quite a bit of stuff, but I think I'll just talk about a few here. We've all been playing, the three of us, the same game, a game I talked about last week, actually. That game is called Outland, the Xbox Live Arcade game, also on PSN, I believe. I've been playing single player and co-op. I'm a little further in co-op, but pretty much close to both places in both. So the single player co-op, they're different. I mean, the single player is more, I guess you would say, a traditional 2D platforming experience. You didn't have too much co-op back in the old days. So it's a little harder, I think, a little more old school feel to it. The multiplayer or co-op as we were doing, I think it's a little bit easier because you can be both colors. And as I was explained before, depending on what color you are, blue or red, it changes the environmental puzzles, it changes platforms. Some enemies are blue and you have to be the opposite color to fight them and stuff like that. So when you're playing with your multiplayer partner, one can be blue and one can be red, so you always have solid platforms, stuff like that. Easier for fighting different enemies, I guess, when compared to having to switch colors in single player. It's a different feel, and I think it's a little more fun, multiplayer, just because it's more all the crap that you get into, and, you know, it's fun and funny to be stealing your partner's coins after they've duked it out with a giant ant or something, or watching your partner fail at a jump and then only to fail yourself 2 seconds later, or the gong show of attempting to work together to solve environmental puzzles, which should be a lot easier than they usually end up being. So, it's a very fun game. I don't know. I like it a lot. I think I prefer playing it in co-op mode than single, but I'll keep playing both. I guess you call it a flaw in the game that I sort of figured out here the other day was the mechanics of jumping is kind of weird. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Like, I will miss a platform, or I'll even miss grabbing a platform and pulling myself up when the last time I was there, literally 20 seconds ago, the exact same platform, the exact same jump, and I'll make the platform. So it's a little weird. I think it probably happened more often than I realized, but it wasn't a problem until we became into a complicated, one of those big, huge levels with all the puzzles and stuff. And now, when you're jumping and you miss, you end up dying or you lose some of your hearts. So that's one thing that's a bit weird. I don't understand why one time I can run and jump to a platform and clear it, no problem, whereas 10 seconds later I'll try it again and miss it. Not quite sure what that works, but overall, Outland, very fun game. I'm having fun playing with Mr. McGee, and also Glazinator joining up. I think he's ahead of us in single player, but I'll let him talk about that. Also, and amazingly, this week, I just remembered, I actually played a very fun game of Halo Reach with both Glazinator and Audio Master G. Not only was one of the better matches I've had in a long time, but amazingly, it was an objective game with random players. It's very rare that in a Halo game you have a good objective game with random players. It was Capture the Flag. That's right. It deserves applause. It's Capture the Flag, and it was fun. It was pretty competitive, I think, is what it was. It was best way to describe it. We were a really strong offense. We're going up against an equally strong defense. They pulled all sorts of tricks, including parking vehicles in the base and all sorts of stuff. We were the aggressors for sure, but they held us back most of the time. Ended up a 1-1 tie, which was perfect because the game was back and forwards. At times, we had our red flag and our blue flag literally in the middle of the map, feet away from each other. You know, it was quite good. You know, I like the Slayer variants better, but hell, if we can get more game types like this, it was probably a fluke. But I wouldn't mind playing more objective Halo games. That was with Audio Master G and Glazinator. Finally, I got my Kinect back up and running. Had it disconnected for quite some time. I learned the hard way that my new hardwood floors and Kinect Sports don't go that well together. It's a bit more painful to jump and to possibly fall when doing all sorts of crazy things on the floor now compared to when I was on carpets before. But anyways, I played the demo for a game, Kinectimals. It's an older game. They're all older games. We're the new games, damn it. But anyways, Kinectimals demo. It's very, very, very cute. Almost, I'd say, too cute for its own good in a way. They did do a great job in the graphics and the animations and this title. The cats are so cute and so lovable. That's a bit of its problem, though, for a gamer like me and probably most of the people listening. If you're over the age of, say, 11, Kinectimals is probably not going to be a game for you, even though it's kind of neat. I mean, I like some mini games and casual games on Kinect and on the Wii, but this game is just very, very centered at the 6 to 11-year-old market, I would say. And if you got a kid, then they're going to love this game. I appreciate the voice commands, the gestures, how these cute little adorable cats copy your motions and they look for you when you go off camera. But I would get sick of the cuteness pretty darn quick. So it's a very high production quality title, but, you know, I'll have to give this one a pass on my Kinect personally. As I wait for some sort of Star Wars news on Kinect to come out, I guess. Aside from that, that's pretty much everything I've been playing this week.
All right, Glazinator, what have you been up to?
Well, like Pat said, we did get a good game of Halo in the other night. You really don't get a lot of good non-Slayer games in Halo because people just like to shoot each other and not concern themselves with the objective at hand. So it was nice to finally play a game where people were doing what they're supposed to be doing and there was some sort of strategy going on. I also played some more Battlefield, just getting ready for Battlefield 3. It's a lot of fun to play with people that you know to get a good squad. And other than that, I've been playing Outland. I haven't been playing a co-op like Bruce and Pat have. I've just been in a party playing single player while they play co-op. And so I'm a little bit farther. It's a good platformer. It's challenging at some points, definitely, especially the boss battles. There aren't a lot of games nowadays where you have to keep doing one thing over and over again until you get it right. And so while it is frustrating when you die a lot in a certain area in the game, it is nice to have the feeling of accomplishment once you do finally get past a hard area. The boss battles are extremely hard. The third boss took me a long time to beat because it involves a lot of going back and forth. It would definitely be a lot easier in co-op because you don't have to run as much. So I'm looking forward to beating it. I actually had to put it down the other day because I was getting mad at it. So while I do get mad at it, I do like it's a love-hate relationship with it. We'll say that. So yeah, that's what I've been playing this week.
Gave up on L.A. Noire?
Oh yes, L.A. Noire. I haven't played it since last week. I want to get back into it, but it's so slow. I saw a comment on the internet the other day where someone said that it was basically the white man's GTA, and I think that's a an accurate reference. It's very slow paced, very refined, which is interesting, but it's a little slow for me. I don't know if I'll get back into it or not. I do want to get back into it, but I'm in a very low point in the story right now. So
I just was curious because, I mean, it's pretty much been across the board. Not reviewers, but just people in general either really, really love the pacing and style of the game, or they're saying what you're saying, having a hard time staying engaged with it.
Yeah, like if you put it down for like more than a day, then it's really hard to get back into it because it is like a movie. You have to sort of do it the whole way through. If that makes any sense.
No, it does, and that's pretty typical. That's why I asked you if you had put it down or what had happened with it, because it kind of happened with me, too, with the game I'll talk about here in just a second. So I think you'll eventually finish it. I mean, I'm sure.
I mean, I sure I will. It's just that right now I just don't really want to play it. That sounds bad, but.
Yeah, no, I understand that you don't mean that in a bad way. I just was curious.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I'm just saying, yep, that's what I've been playing.
Okay. As for me, yes, I've been playing Outland. I think I would only play this game co-op. We've all heard me say a thousand times, don't like platformers, yada, yada, yada. Well, not that I don't like them, that I suck at them. But for some reason, this game is so entertaining playing with somebody else, especially if it's somebody you get along with really well, which as much as Pat and I joke we don't, I think we do make a pretty good co-op team. I don't know, it's just... It's a lot of fun, and it's a lot of humor built on the two people playing it. You know, cussing each other for stealing health, cussing each other for getting killed in a bad spot, like a bed of spikes. And I don't mean cussing in a way of, we're actually mad with each other. It's just some of the puzzles and some of the situations are so ludicrous that they're frustrating on one hand, but on the other, you can't help but laugh at them. And in fact, even as an admitted non-platform fan, last night Patrick and I were kind of talking, and I think after a couple really difficult puzzles and we had left the game at a difficult point from the night before, I think overall his frustration with it was more than mine was, which was rather interesting, you know, given our tastes in history. But really for me, the comedy, I suppose you could say, of playing it with somebody else just overrides any kind of frustration. I mean, it has its frustrating moments. That one puzzle Patrick was talking about, I was starting to seriously think that our potential two-man review may be going down the drain unless we got a pinch hitter and Glacinator to get our old asses past it and then take over again or something like that. But we worked through it, and I think eventually we'll finish the game. Right now we're toward the end of the second level and working our way through it. But I cannot see myself playing the single player. I think I would get far too frustrated. But it is a just night and day blast in co-op. Part of the reason, too, I asked Glacinator about L.A. Noire is because I'm having the same problem with The Witcher. Now, if you pay attention to the internet at all, a couple Witcher 2 reviews are getting taken to the rack for calling it a game that's hard to get into, hard to stay into, and giving them less than awesome review scores. Well, it's funny because if that's how The Witcher 2 is, I don't think I'll ever be picking it up because I like a lot of what the original Witcher is doing, like I talked about last week. But like Glacinator said, it's impossible to pick it up once you put it down, and it's really impossible to stay enthusiastic about it. There's so much just running around and backtracking, and all of it is really tedious. I mean, even by RPG standards, I think I popped off the Pat the other night in Xbox Live that this would be him and Glacinator's RPG definition of hell. I mean, it just, even for me, and as somebody who loves RPGs, this is just... It's really hard to stay with it. And like Glacinator, I've put it down now for the last couple days, and I know I'll pick it up again. I know I'll eventually finish it, but I'm at a point in the game where it's just really, really, you just got to be willing to grind it out. And I just have not been in that kind of mood this week. Let's see what else. Oh, I played the demo for Dungeons and Dragons Daggerdale. I only played the demo of it, which is approximately 10 minutes long. and it runs you through just a quick synopsis of what the game is. I'm really hesitant to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. I don't know why the Dungeons & Dragons brand is on this game particularly. Maybe it opens up more after the demo. Maybe I'm being a little too harsh, but I wasn't super impressed with the demo. And at 1,200 points, I don't see myself picking this game up until it's at a cheaper rate and I have less games I want to play first. It's pretty much a third-person gauntlet is kind of what it reminded me of. I suppose the good thing about it, if you had people who aren't RPG enthusiastic and you had a group of friends who wanted to sit down and kind of play more of a hack and slash dungeon crawler, I could see this title being that kind of fun for the simple fact of what I was talking about with Outland, joking with your buddies, camaraderie, all of that, but not at 1200 points. And even then you may, you know, have some non-RPG or non-Dungeons & Dragons fans really screaming at you if the experience turned out to be brutally frustrating. So for now, I think I'll give Daggerdale a pass. I will echo some sentiments Audio Master G said last night in that I would really like to see another D&D RPG, a true RPG. Whether that'll ever happen, I'm not even sure who has the license rights for D&D from Wizard for video games at this point, but I'd recommend at least check out the demo. Maybe you'll like it better than I did. Let's see. Finally, I played the Minecraft 1.6 update. That would be the update that fixed a bunch of stuff, changed a bunch of stuff, but included the addition of maps. Now, I've been really, really looking forward to the maps. I thought it was the one thing from day one when I bought the game in the alpha that should have been there from day one. I like the maps. They make you feel less like you're completely and hopefully and utterly lost, so that you don't just give up, kill yourself, start a new world or whatever. The one hang up some players may have about the maps is the fact that they're only of a certain size. So if you walk off that grid in your world, then you will disappear off the map. Your little pointer will disappear off the map. Which isn't too bad once you're aware of it, because then you just make another map. And so you can kind of control how many maps you want to be packing, which maps work. The best thing I've found with the maps is to make them when you're in one of your outposts or houses or towns or however you do it, because then it centers the map right on that outpost, which works really well. I've been farting around all over the world, single-player world I've built. Seems to work pretty well. Terrain changes such as grass and more frequent rain and that kind of stuff seems pretty cool. It's just something more you gotta kind of work into your routine and strategy. The final thing that they changed that I thought was gonna work a lot better was, the hatches. Basically, hatches are for like when you have a ladder going to the top of your building or whatever. I kind of wish Notch had made those a full block and not a half block, because they require some finagling to actually close off a ladder to the top of your building. It seems a little sketchy, I suppose the word would be. They work perfectly fine. I just kind of wish they were a full block rather than a half block. I kind of understand why they're a half block, but yeah. Overall, the update's pretty good. There's still a few bugs in it. So you might want to be sort of careful. Notch said tonight here at some point on Twitter that they would fix all the bugs either tomorrow or Monday. I'm assuming most of the ones that I ran into that were troubling or frustrating should be out of it by tomorrow. But overall, a good addition to Minecraft with the 1.6 update, and I'm having a lot of fun with it. I think as I get more and more used to the maps, they'll be better. Hopefully they'll make additions to the maps where you can mark on them, hang them on a wall, so on and so forth and such like. And that is all I've been playing, so guess what? We're done with what we've been playing.
I was going to say real quick, can you get the server up so we can try out the Nether in multiplayer?
Yeah, that's probably not going to happen for a while.
No.
Well, the PC that I'm currently recording on used to be the Minecraft server, so kind of got a little issue there. But I am in the process of seeing what I can do about that.
All right.
But yeah, but I am looking forward to it because I think the maps would also help in multiplayer and in going to the Nether and real quick, one other thing that changed too is fire. You can actually now use what the hell was I calling it in my written post?
Forest Begone?
Yes. You can now use Forest Begone and control it. It's not Forest Begone and get the hell out of its way, or Forest Begone and if you're on the wrong side of it, it sets you on fire. It's now controllable. It burns more like real fire. If it's in one tree, it just kind of burns that one tree down slowly. If you just started a fire in a pack of trees, well, it kind of burns faster. I'm glad I remember that. That was really the most impressive thing, because if you got a bucket of water and you go, I don't want to burn this forest down, you can pretty much put out the forest with a bucket of water.
Smokey the Bear approved forest fires.
Yeah, kind of. Basically, you're just kind of trimming the land a little bit of conservation management, yeah. Unless you're like me and just run around setting everything on fire to see how big it'll get.
Yeah.
One other thing, too, the Glacinator will get a kick out of, and if you play Minecraft, you'll get a kick out of. I'm sure as you're all aware with the weather, there's now lightning and thunder, right? Quick story. I'm in my house the other day, watching two zombies, a skeleton, and a creeper out by the edge of a lake or ocean. It's thundering, it's lightning, I can't go outside because there's crap all around my door. So I'm just sitting there waiting for it to turn night so I can go to bed. Out of the corner of my window, I hear the crack of thunder, and out of the corner of my window, I see this kerfloom. And I look over there, and all of a sudden, the zombies, the skeleton, and the creeper are gone. So I battled the one spider that was in front of my door out of the way and ran over there. Apparently, as close as I can figure out, lightning hit the creeper, which detonated him, and blew up the zombies and the skeleton. So that was a little bit of interesting tidbit. I didn't know the weather. I knew the lightning could hit players. I didn't know it could also hit mobs.
Yeah, it can hit the creepers and supercharge them, so they do double damage.
Oh, is that why the hole was bigger?
Yeah, they turn blue and they sparkle.
I didn't see the blue. I just saw the, you know, that poof that they make when they explode?
Yeah.
I heard the sound, which sounded louder, and I saw the poof, because I was actually looking in the opposite direction. And so I just figured that one of them had gotten hit by lightning. Yeah, I didn't actually see it. Now that I know they can be supercharged by lightning, I'm glad I wasn't anywhere near it. So there you go. That's what I've been playing. Let's move on to our discussion topic. Our discussion topic this week is discussion, not debate, because I couldn't think of anything to debate. It's pre-E3, folks. We're really hurting here. Only two more shows. Patrick said, hey, we don't talk about PC games that much, so let's do our favorite old-school PC game or favorite PC game, which is going to take me like 6 hours to even figure out. So basically what I'm going to do is, since it was his topic, I'm going to turn Patrick loose, the more console gamer, to tell us what his favorite PC game is, or favorite old PC game, or PC gaming memory, or something off the VIC-20, or reel-to-reel tapes.
Yeah. TI-99-4A. I'm not gonna go that far back, although yes, it used audio tape for some Dungeon and Dragon-y type game, I remember. I'm not gonna go that far back, but I will be going back in time. We don't necessarily, to make it easier, especially probably for Glazenator, we don't have to come up with one game. If you have one, then that's cool. I was just more thinking about what I would call for me my more quote-unquote golden age of PC gaming, when I actually used to play a lot of PC games. It was Gunsage's articles, if you look at wonderpodonline.com. He's got quite a few old, you know, his favorite first-person shooter of the 90s and his brawlers of the 90s. And I started looking at some of those videos, and I see games I forgot that I really liked back in the day. So I don't know. I really like the shooters back in the day on PC, and not necessarily just first-person shooters. They could be third-person and all sorts of ones. One of my favorite ones, I remember a game called Descent. I'm sure some of you out there are old enough to remember it. Think of it as sort of a first-person hallway shooter, only you're in a big spaceship. Well, not really a big spaceship. You're in a spaceship, and you're going through tunnels instead of hallways, and you're going in through inside of planets and stuff. And I tell you, that's one game where I remember people were talking about Snoopy Flying Ace and playing upside down. This is one game where I think I played 75% of the game upside down. You know, it controlled really neat because unlike some of the corridor shooters like the Dooms and stuff like that of that era, you had full movement. You could go up, you could go down, left, right. Like I said, you could be upside down. It was quite cool. I really liked the game Descent. There was an N64 copy of it. I forget what it was called, but it was pretty good too. But I just really liked the game Descent. Look it up on YouTube for those youngins who don't know what it's talking about. That's definitely one of my favorite ones. I guess other ones, I like the old classic Star Wars games. It was Star Wars and computer games at the time. I just couldn't go wrong. The original, what was that game called? Rebel Assault. I mean, by today's standards, it looks like crap, and it's all on rails and pre-rendered and that terrible full-motion video that everybody hates now. But at the time, Rebel Assault was one of my favorite games. It was quite fun. Dark Forces, back on shooters. I mean, that was like Doom and Star Wars combined. Dark Forces was one of my favorite shooters of all time. So, I don't know, I just thought I'd throw out if you guys have any older PC games, and it doesn't have to be that old for Glazinator, that you liked, because we don't give PC gaming enough love on this podcast, I think. So, what do you guys think? Do you have enough time to think of some of your favorites there, Bruce?
Actually, my first comment was going to be the golden age of PC gaming. Glazinator wasn't even born yet. Confirmed.
Yep.
Let's get to Glazinator. Do you, and of course this obviously applies to Mac since you're a Mac fangirl. gotta get my cheap shots in where I can. Thank you. Yeah, that's one you do need to find is a good quality rim shot, especially if I'm going to continue to be on the show. No, seriously though, I mean, were there any, like, kind of growing up or now, have there been any PC or computer games that you really remember fondly, like Patrick's talking about?
Oh, sure. I mean, my parents got a computer when I was about 7, and this was before I got my Game Boy Color, which is my first gaming, like official gaming system. And I had two main games that I would go back and forth with, that which would be like the games I played all the time. Like if I was at home, I'd be playing them. And these were Roller Coaster Tycoon and Midtown Madness. Have either of you heard of those?
I've never played Roller Coaster Tycoon, but I remember Midtown Madness and I recall playing it quite a bit.
All right. Okay. Well, Roller Coaster Tycoon is basically it's a theme park simulator. Like you build your own, it's like a Sim City, but it's like about theme parks. And like, I got really good at it. Like I would make a bazillion roller coasters in like 2 acres of land. And I don't know. I'd play it all the time. And when I was younger, I had like this desire to be like a roller coaster designer because of that game, which I knew was going to happen eventually because all roller coasters are made in Sweden. And I'm not learning Swedish anytime soon. So that was one game, was Roller Coaster Tycoon. And the second one, Midtown Madness, it was basically just a racing game. And one that I played was set in Chicago, and you would drive around downtown Chicago. And I really never did any races because I wasn't very good at it being so young. I would just do the free roam, and just drive around the city and mess around with like the weather settings, make it rain or, have more pedestrians on the street. And then I remember for Christmas, my dad really liked to play that game too. So he went out and bought an actual like steering wheel for it. So we had the whole setup. We had the steering wheel in front of the computer, and I had like a footstool, which I put the pedals and the gas on. And so I would drive around and pretend to run over people and jump over bridges and everything. So yeah, those were my two major PC games that I played back when I was younger, which may be more modern games for you guys since you're older. But yeah.
old farts, basically. You can say it. Come on, I called you a Mac fan girl 10 minutes ago. Boy,
from my French, but you're an asshole.
He won't say it, but he's got a soundboard that will. Which is fine either way. Message received. Shit, what was I gonna say? Oh yeah. Those of you that have listened to all 65 of these shows, plus the specials, first off for Saints, second off, know that I really am a PC gamer at heart. I mean, I have consoles now. I love my 360. I love playing with these guys and other members of the WonderPod crew. But I grew up on PC gaming. It wasn't until 2007 that I actually bought my first console, although I played on a ton of the other ones, as a kid. So when Patrick brought up this topic, I thought, ooh, I liked it, but damn, how do I only pick a couple three to talk about? So I decided to split it up between RTS, shooter, and racing game. Now, I'm not going to do RPG because you guys have all heard me talk about Planescape Torment 1,000 times. So there we go. RTS is pretty simple. It's one of the first, I think 16-bit or whatever you want to call it, 32-bit games that just really captivated my attention. And I'm not talking the super early days. I remember some of the games like Ultima and stuff like that, but more the, like Pentium 1 days, let's say, was Warcraft. Not World of Warcraft. There was an RTS set of RTS games before World of Warcraft. Warcraft 1, my cousin got it on a demo at some point, and we just played that demo for hours on end, and this was when demos came on discs. You know, he got it with like a magazine or at the local computer shop. So as soon as Warcraft came out, I really got hooked into RTS games and into that series. I own every copy of the Warcraft series from 1 to 3, all the expansions, the online only for Warcraft 2, all of them, the original discs from Blizzard, still got the cases around here. So that was a huge part of my PC gaming, but it wasn't my earliest PC gaming. If you want to go back in time to like the Commodore 64, Commodore Amiga, that's where you kind of get into the racing game. And the racing game is one that it was first on the Amiga, and then I got a better copy of it on the PC for my cousin. It was called Carmageddon. Now, Carmageddon was basically this game where you're in these souped-up Mad Max race cars, and you're racing around the city, but it was also almost like the first GTA because you got to run over pedestrians, hit cop cars, hit your other opponents. You had guns. You had missiles, depending on the car you had. You had a really cool cop car tank, kind of armored car that you got at the end of the game for beating it, and then once you got to that point, racing around with that, you either race through the city streets, there were some arena races, Destruction Derby. I mean, it was a great racing game. It's been around for ages. There were a couple crappy console ports, and I don't mean they're crappy because they were on console. They were just crappy in general. I've been hearing rumors that they're talking about remaking it. I think that might be a 3D remake. I wouldn't mind a HD up-gen remake. I wouldn't mind seeing. And then finally we come to the shooters. Boy, there was a lot of shooters I could have picked because I played it, all of them. I mean, on the PC. But I think the one I'm going to go with is the original Medal of Honor Allied Assault. And I say that because while Quake and Doom and Wolfenstein and all those were really great games, Medal of Honor was the first time you got to actually see the potential that lay there for graphics, for movement, for gameplay, for that kind of thing. And plus, I'm a history buff, so having it set in World War II, actually hitting the beach at Normandy for the first time, you know, in a computer game, obviously, was really, really cool to me. You know, and so Medal of Honor, Allied Assault, all those different games that came in the series for a while was really, really, really good. So there you go on the just three of my PC gaming history. Patrick, you had some of those older like Commodores and older PCs. Did you ever play Carmageddon?
I haven't played. No, that's one I haven't played. I'm not sure why. I just didn't. I remember it and recognize the name, so someone I knew must have had it or something, but no, I never played it.
It was the kind that you didn't want your parents to know you had. Because like, wow. You're literally, we talked about it in video, in another podcast episode, where we were talking about, you know, video games affecting our reality connected to some news story. Because it's like literally you'd see an old lady, like a pixelated old lady. It was, of course, not very good graphics. And a walker going up on the hood of your car while you're banging door to, I mean, it was really, and it had like the Mortal Kombat style blood, but not like over the top like Mortal Kombat. I mean, it was kind of the one that you bought yourself with your allowance money and then you didn't let your parents know you had.
Yep.
At least the Amiga version was. When I got it on PC, it was when my cousin was first, at college, and I got it, potentially on a burnt disc, maybe not. I think statute limitations have run out. You know, and so it was just one of those games that was like a guilty pleasure when I first had it, because it's like, ooh, you know, if my mom saw me running over people with a car, I mean, to think where games have gone now, it's just crazy, you know, because you wouldn't even think twice about it now.
Yeah, that's definitely when I didn't play too many racing games at all. From the off the top of my head, Need for Speed is pretty much the only PC racing games I really played at all.
Yeah, I've got a couple, and I'd have to reach across the room or roll a chair across the room and find it. There was one Need for Speed game, I think it was Need for Speed, that I even had the racing wheel set up for a while, like Glacinator's talking about. It was one of the Hot Pursuits, because you could get chased by cops and all this, that, and the other thing. And, of course, there was a couple NASCAR games and other games that were just, they were fun to play, you know, especially if you, like, some of those you could play on LAN, so you could, a bunch of your buddies could come over and you could just play the game together, and you're, like, sitting there arguing and crashing into each other and trying to run the pit car off, you know, off before the race even starts. And so, I mean, a lot of them were more LAN, you know, kind of early multiplayer type stuff. I played Midtown Madness too, and I was kind of like Glacinator. I had to look it up on Wikipedia just to remember, make sure it was the one I was thinking of. But I was kind of like Glacinator. I just always turned it on free roam. The racing was actually kind of boring, but so there you go. That's been our discussion topic. Even though I begged and pleaded, we didn't get any, questions on Facebook. Although we did get a question of sort, and I'm going to take the time to answer it because I think it's something I've always wanted to answer on the podcast. I've talked about it a couple times in my written posts, but Douglas Dalisk, and I'm probably pronouncing his name wrong. He's a guy I actually know, lives here near me. Yes, that's right. Real people do actually interact with me on occasion. They're paid high amounts of money, but they do interact with me. His comment when I asked for questions for WonderPod was, yeah, actually, have you guys thought about reviewing Dirt 3? It's just released, and I'm curious if it's any good. I told him a good place to go get a review by a reviewer I trust, but I kind of wanted to bring up real quick why I'm not reviewing games, and if these two guys want to talk about it too. Part of it's just money. I eventually plan to play Dirt 3, but I'm not made out of money. So I can't just go pick them up every time they release. And the second thing about reviewing is I'm not convinced I can be harsh enough when I need to be. Now that's not to say that I'm going to give the standard IGN 7-10 score. No, I'm just thinking that I'm too forgiving. I'm not sure I can be objective enough, and I'm a little afraid that if I do start getting into that game reviewer mode, that it's going to ruin some of my fun playing the games. So, while I think at some point I intend to review Doug, just probably not right now, both financially and just kind of mindset-wise, I really need the next time Patrick's bugging me about reviewing it, or prodding me, I should say, reviewing an indie title or something of that nature, I may just have to break down and do it and see how completely horrible it is, or how completely horrible a job I do. Pat, you used to do some reviews. You ever planning on doing any more here in the near future, or what's your
current ones? Yeah, I just motivation.
You know what? That's part of it too. Yeah, it's
by the time I pick up a title, play the crap out of it, it's like there's been 1,000 reviews out there already. But Yeah, I'll be doing a few in the future. I hope.
Glacinator, how about you?
As I've told you before, it's you have to have the right balance of procrastination and motivation, I think. So my best writing, or whatever you want to call it, would definitely be around exam time. And so right now in the summer months, I'm kind of like, I guess I'll just goof off for today. So, but if people do want to hear reviews, I'll write reviews, though. I mean, it's not like I'm lazy or anything. I just said.
Well, oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
All I was going to say to Douglas's question, too, is I think part of our motivational issues is, and this is not a knock on professional reviewers, so don't even think that, is most professional reviewers either have the finances to buy the games they want to review but didn't get a review copy, or they get review copies. And, in getting review copies, of course, they're under embargo and NDA until it's time to release the review. So they have such a head start on a lot of us that, like Patrick was discussing, it kind of kills your motivation at times. We shouldn't let it. I mean, if we want to be writing and learn and doing better reviews and things of that nature, we probably should just be doing it. There's also the silly notion that I had when we started WonderPod Online that it wouldn't just be completely about video games. It may end up there just purely by evolution, but right now I just think there's a ton of factors. Probably procrastination and motivation are the two biggest for most of us, but I've heard good things about Dirt 3. The dude I sent you to, Dale North, loves racing games, knows racing games. The first two Dirts were really good. I'm expecting the third one to be excellent, especially with some of the modes they added into it. And it's on my list. It's on my list of games to be played. So, but thanks, Douglas. We appreciate you taking the time to add a comment. If you want to ask us any questions, we have it on Facebook. Hell, we're talking on Facebook right now as we do this show. So if you happen to be cruising by the WonderPod Facebook, see us sitting there chatting, join with us in a thread, whatever. And now I'm out of order. Oh, yeah. It's time for Survivornaut. Is that what we've christened him now, Patrick? Survivornaut?
I think so. It flows off the tongue so well.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, Survivor. Okay, fuck it then. That's it. That's what we're calling him. Yes, Survivornaut G. That's right. He's back with another, I think, retro-themed question. He's up there in space, but we're still kind of calling him what we want to call him. So take it away, Survivornaut G.
WonderPod security interface detection online. External message.
Probe detected.
System analysis.
Detects sender. Data analyzed.
What's up, WonderPodOnline.com crew? Cosmonaut G signing in. But I'm not sure how much longer I will be a cosmonaut. Hopefully I'm back with my family soon. I miss them. I'm recording this message with about 5 hours of air left in the asteroid analysis space station. I've refueled and stalked that bastard alien's escape WonderPod, and I've done about everything I can to get the hell home. Problem is that the alien must have reprogrammed the computer system on board to its own language, so setting the coordinates to a specific destination is almost impossible. The visual image portrayed on the navigation monitor displays a planet that has to be Earth. No, Diddy, it's gotta be Earth. I already gave you a chance to figure it out, and we're all out of time. I want to get the hell out of here, but with a little bit of air left on site in case we have to return. It's called planning ahead, monkey. Yeah, I hear you. Diddy made a request for the Wonderstalgia game this week. Surprisingly enough, he pointed at himself and then pantomimed himself throwing things and climbing ladders. And I figured out what game he was talking about real quick, like 9. That's right, folks. This week, we're talking Donkey Kong. This game is so important to gaming, it's not even funny. Considering that this introduced the gaming community to a jumping man, or Jumpman for that matter, who would later become Mario of Nintendo fame, one cannot dismiss the significance of the title. But let's step away from the Marios and the Super Marios and the Yoshis and the Toads for a moment. We'll never step away from the man known as Luigi, though. Donkey Kong was released in 1981 by Nintendo. It's a classic platformer game where you maneuver Jumpman through the obstacles, up ladders, and overthrown barrels to attempt to usurp the evil giant ape, the Donkey Kong, if you will, and rescue the damsel in distress known as Pauline. I've spent a lot of time playing this game, more so on my Coleco console than any other title I can think of. I still have nightmares of attempting to traverse across the elevators and avoid the fire monsters that appeared in the advanced levels of the title. Like last week, Donkey Kong is immortalized amongst gaming and pop culture. If you somehow have not heard of it, you're probably in the minority here. So I'm gonna leave it at that and let the Wonder Pod crew tell us all about Donkey Kong, their experience playing it, and its legacy in the medium of video games. Well, I've got to cut this short and head out into the dark void of outer space. Fun! It's been lots of fun, but I hope this is the last time I send a message away from home. Alright, come on, Diddy, let's get the fuck off this rock. Cosmonaut G, signing off.
Signal complete.
Well, Survivor Not, G Cosmonaut, Survivor Man, whatever you want to be called at the moment. Friend of Diddy, your little monkey friend. It sucks that you can't read that alien language on the Escape Wonder Pod, otherwise you'd be back home sooner rather than later. It also sucks that you're running out of air on your space station. But good luck to you in your adventures, Survivor Not. We hope you make it home safe and sound, but something tells me your adventures are not over yet. Anyways, Donkey Kong. Well, a great choice of a game for a classic retro talk, you know. You've left it pretty wide open for us to talk about, mostly about the original Donkey Kong, but of course the legacy that has come with it all the way up to recent Donkey Kong Country Returns on the Nintendo Wii. The original Donkey Kong, amazing classic game in my opinion, indeed, precursor to many, as I say, future Nintendo games, Mario Brothers and all the others that I'm not going to list or will be here all day. I really love this game in the arcades, the original Donkey Kong. There was an arcade where I used to live, only a few blocks away. I used to go there with my brother all the time. Played a ton of Donkey Kong. We weren't bad at it. My brother was better, like he was at most games, than I was. And then one day I watched someone playing it. And it was like he just wasn't dying that much. And it turned out that there's a setting on the original arcade cabinet that if you set it to this setting, I mean, if you're an arcade owner, you're not going to put it on this setting, but you could... if you barely put Mario's hand just barely above the ladder, no barrels would fall on him, ever. It was almost like a cheat, really. So you would never have any worries about barrels falling down on your ladders if you did that on this setting. Kind of cheating, but I liked it and I used it. Of course, when I played in other arcades in the city and wherever I went, that setting was never on because they wanted you to die and put more quarters in the damn machine. So it was much more of a challenge. I also liked the classic Donkey Kong Country 2 and not so much Donkey Kong Country 3. That I didn't even know who the hell that character was that's shooting air or water or whatever it is at Donkey Kong. Not a big fan of Donkey Kong Country 3. It was okay, but compared to Donkey Kong Jr. and Donkey Kong, it was not quite the same, that's for sure. I doubt the same people were involved in it, really. Let's see, well, Donkey Kong kind of went away for a while, really, after that, playing it there in the arcades and stuff, until, of course, it was revitalized, Donkey Kong Country Returns, Super Nintendo with a new look, new attitude, and really awesome visuals for its time. I don't know. I guess that lasted for quite a while, and now it's gone all the way up to Donkey Kong Country Returns on the Wii. You know, if you listen to our year-end special, you remember me saying it was one of my top games runner-ups for Game of the Year. So, Donkey Kong's a great choice there, Survivor Not G. Thanks for a really good choice there, and thanks for the memories. What do you guys think of Donkey Kong?
Well, I've never actually played Donkey Kong on an original cabinet. They just don't exist anymore. I can't find one anywhere. But I have played various different kinds of Donkey Kong, like on different systems. Like they had it on Animal Crossing. You could get NES games and you could play them in Animal Crossing. I mean, I'm sure I've played it as a flash game somewhere. I mean, they even have Donkey Kong levels in Super Smash Brothers now. So I have played Donkey Kong. I don't have the original experience, but I have played it. It is one of those games, like Pac-Man that we talked about last week, that will be remembered for a very long time. It might even be the first video game to have its own, like, documentary made after it. I don't know if either of you guys saw The King of Kong's, The King of Kong when it came out, which was a documentary about, Steve Wiebe and, I forgot the other guy who had, he's Tabasco. He's like a Tabasco company after him or something, but they're trying to compete for the top score. So, it is one of those games that will be remembered for a very long time. It's just very simple. You know, you get, as soon as you put the quarters in, you know what to do. You have to get up to the top and rescue Pauline. So, you know, it's, I think sometimes the most remembered games are usually the most simplistic. You know, that's just me trying to be fancy. I don't know.
The guy with the hot sauce named after him, is he's a douchebag with the American flag tie?
Yes, yes.
The dude with the mullet, yeah.
Yeah, I hate that guy. I want to stick.
Let me look up his name real quick.
Have you seen the movie?
Forks in his eyeballs. No, I have not.
You'll hate him much more.
That's why I read a review of the movie.
Oh, Billy Mitchell.
Yeah, Billy Mitchell.
Thank you, Billy Mitchell. I read a review of the movie at either Destructoid or N4G or someplace like that. I think it was N4G. And I just, listening to this guy talk about Billy Mitchell, and he actually liked him. And I saw a couple interviews with him, you know, because there's been some disputes about the world records, mostly started by this Mitchell guy. He just came off to me as a total cockhead. And so it's like I had an opportunity to see King of Kong's, which really sounds more like a porno to my sick mind. But, you know, we're one letter away, people. You know, but I could not tolerate him in a 5-minute interview I saw on some other gaming website. And it's like, I'm not sitting through a documentary where they're following around this guy because he's the best Donkey Kong player ever.
It's a good documentary. And they do follow Steve Wiebe a little bit more than they do follow Billy Mitchell. And they portray Billy Mitchell in like this sort of like crazy sense. It's funny how they show him off.
Well, Nintendo kind of pissed me off when they made the new Donkey Kong Country because they put Billy Mitchell's tie in the fucking game.
Really?
In a level. Yeah. You have to go look it up. I remember seeing it in Game Informer or something like that, and it's kind of like, I don't think I ever want to play that game. Yeah, it's a water level because the tie's not colored, but it's a definite American flag tie, and it's in, like, granite. It's on a water level somewhere. I'd have to look it up. I just remember seeing the picture in Game Informer and them talking about whoever makes the Donkey Kong Countries doing an homage to Billy Mitchell. I'm like, dude, the other guy's better. Why didn't they do an homage to him? And now we've wandered off topic. And it's all my fault, as usual. Survivor Man G... Oh, fuck. Survivor Not... I'll get your name right eventually, dude. You'll probably be back on Earth by the time I do. Survivor Not G... you know, it's funny because as far as arcades go, and really that's the only place I played Donkey Kong, the only Donkey Kong I like is really the original arcade Donkey Kong. And if that wasn't enough of a stab in the heart to the Nintendo fans, two of which are sitting here with me, I actually like the arcade Donkey Kong better than I do the arcade Mario Brothers. I spent more time with it. I obsessed over it more, trying to beat those levels. In fact, I think I was the first kid to figure out that was Mario in Donkey Kong, and like there'd be fights in our little arcade about, that's not him, no, it's not him, look, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, so Donkey Kong to me was always, and Glazner has it absolutely right, it was simplistic. It was pretty much just pattern memorization, which to a point Mario Brothers is too, at least the arcade cabinets, but there was just something about the pattern memorization that just really, really stuck with me and really made me want to play the game over and over again and wasted a lot of quarters on it. Donkey Kong is just one of those things, like Pac-Man, like everybody else here said, it's iconic. I love the concept. Maybe I'll finally have to break down and play Donkey Kong Country on the Wii, since I have one of those now. Yeah, but good game to bring up, Survivor Not G. We really appreciate it and hope to hear from you next week. Donkey Kongi? What the fuck is that?
There's a Donkey Konga. for the.
Did you ever play that? Yeah, it's a rhythm game.
Oh my gosh, Rock Lobster. Like, oh my.
Is it good?
No.
No.
The only reason I know about it.
Rock Lobster. Just drums.
It's just drums. It's bongos.
Yeah.
The only reason I know about it, and I don't know if either of you have ever heard of this webcomic, there's a Swedish webcomic called Little Gamers. The two guys that do that comic, Christian Ponder and some other jackass, and he is a jackass because he hates Americans, they love that game. And so they did a ton of strips on Donkey Konga. And like they were their patented line when they did Donkey Konga strips, like the punchline was "Bongo on, dude." And I thought this was a joke. I like actually had to look it up that it was literally a rhythm game with just drums, basically bongos. Which makes
sense.
Either
hit the left one, or you can hit the right one, or you can hit both at the same time, or you could clap, or hit the side of the drums too.
That's yeah.
So many different options.
Donkey Konga, who knew? So
one of the few things I don't mind losing in the flood.
Oh, did you lose it in
yes,
the
downstairs? I was not disappointed that it was gone.
You lost it during the flood after Katrina?
Yeah.
Didn't shed a tear over that one, huh?
No.
Was it? Did you lose the game and the drum peripheral, or just the?
I lost all my games downstairs. I mean, that was the one game I didn't care that I lost, though.
Oh, okay, I gotcha. Well, yeah. I'd tell Patrick not to stop putting his Nintendo stuff down in the basement, but I don't think they get too many hurricanes in Calgary, Canada. Wow, that went over so well. Okay, let's move on. Just fucking dead air. When it just sucks, it just
Making
sucks
for
dead
some
air.
Sound files. Huh. Where's our soundboard?
Womp, 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 womp. Okay, let's move on to news. My hurricane joke didn't do anything, so let's just leave it. Two quick things. In case you've been living under a rock, the Modern Warfare 3 reveal trailer has been released. If you're too lazy to watch videos, go to any gaming blog on the planet. They've broken it down frame by frame for you to show you all the cool shit that probably really isn't actually in the game. It's probably in cutscenes. If you can tell by the sarcastic tone of my voice, I'm kind of already sick of Modern Warfare 3. Also, and this is more important news, because it means it's real. It's going to actually happen. Duke Nukem has gone gold. That's right. Duke Nukem Forever has gone gold. Now, if you're not familiar with that term, going gold in the gaming industry means that it's done, it's finished, finito, it's out the door, it's going to be released. There's nothing stopping it.
Holy cow.
Duke's back too this week. Can you imagine that? So for those of you sweating whether Duke Nukem Forever is going to be out or not, it's gone gold. It's coming out. That's the last hurdle it had to clear. Now, for smartasses like me who are not really Duke fans, we can sit back and watch the Battling Banjo reviews, because I have a feeling that the reviews for that game are going to be all over the place.
Payback time.
Yeah, it only took you a decade, Duke.
I'm not crying over this.
Sounds like you are.
It's time to kick ass and chew bubble gum, and I'm all out of gum.
Bring it. Bring it. That's all I got to say. Now, I also got to say we're going moving on to our first news story after telling you Duke's gone gold, just so I could set up the soundboard guy. The first one is a case of everybody wanted to panic, and everybody wanted this to be a bigger story, but it wasn't. I got Mike's version of it from Industry Gamers because it was the least panicky. Headline is Xbox Live Marketplace goes down, and that's really all I got to read. Sounds like yesterday for about 3 or 4 hours, both the marketplace at Xbox.com and on the Xbox Live dashboard was down. It was unusable. There was the dashboard blade for it, but nothing in it. Of course, the less honest or less truthful gaming blogs were running all over the place claiming it was going to be like that. You know, it must be some Sony-style type of thing. Oh, no, oh, no, oh, no. I still haven't heard what it was in this Industry Gamer article. They kind of blamed it on the Xbox Live dashboard update, which not everybody has yet. I started seeing the news of this on Twitter. Basically, Major Nelson stayed on top of it as far as giving us updates. Sounded just kind of like a gremlin in the works. There was no, you know, your data has not been breached. There was no big bad evil hackers at the controls. I think it was just basically a network mess up. So, but in case you hadn't heard about it, wanted to let you know, and also to be able to poke fun at some blogs who were trying to turn this into the Sony PSN breach part two, when it turned out to be much ado about nothing. Glacinator, any thoughts on Xbox Live going down? Were you panicking? Were you pulling out your hair?
No, I wasn't on 360 this morning. I just turned it on, and the stuff's all back up, so why are you fussing?
Yeah, that was pretty much it. I mean, people were basically basically losing their shit before we even knew what happened. Patrick, you were out throwing mail in the river, so you really didn't care because the marketplace was back up by the time you got home, wasn't it?
Yeah, I didn't notice anything and don't really care. I guess because of the whole Sony huge, massive thing that some websites, I guess, are going to be posting it and hoping for worse news just for hits or something. But, yeah, I think this was probably had something to do with setting up for the new dashboard, because the marketplace, what, are they going to be able to use PayPal now, right? Isn't that one of the things?
Yeah, that's well, I don't know if you'll be able to use PayPal directly on the marketplace blade, but I think, you know, well, you've never done it, neither is Glacinator. If you go to add points with your bank card or credit card, you either do it on when you hit the center button, you know, you go to your account, or if you go to download a game and you don't have enough points, they'll ask you if you want add points to take you to that same area. I think all that will do is, instead of just being, you know, like if it asks me if I want to add it to this bank card, credit card, and I say yes, and instead of that being your only option, I think there will also be an option for PayPal. So I don't know if that has anything to do with the actual marketplace itself. I think that has more to do with your individual account, because you're going to have to link a PayPal account to it. Like, I'll have to link my PayPal account to my Xbox Live account, I imagine. Sure. I don't know. I keep hearing about this update, and I still don't have it. Glacinator apparently has it in Louisiana, so apparently I'll get it sooner or later. They're blaming everything for this update. Xbox is crashing, the Live marketplace going down, and I don't even think everybody has it yet.
I mean, mine hasn't red-ringed yet, so everything's looking good.
Well, if it does, call GunSage.
If it does, I'll let you know through Rick.
Well, if it does, call GunSage. He knows the guy who can repair it for you.
Hey-o!
Oh, what was the GunSage joke I did last week that, oh, it was that Glacinator blew for me. So yeah, there we go. So if you were wondering if there was anything to be concerned about, but were too lazy to go look it up on the gaming blogs yourself, no, it sounds like it was just, like Pat said, they were setting up for this update, something goofed up, you know, cause network problems still do happen. A lot of times we just never know about them. They're not all Sony style, you know, bore a hole in the security firewall and go to town stealing everything, you know, which at this point with Sony seems like it's just been, you know, user information. I still am waiting for all those credit card charges and the millions of dollars people lost that, you know, everybody told me was going to happen, because it hasn't happened yet.
Be careful, it's a trap!
Yes, it is. It's a trap. Because now we're moving into a story that really kind of made me shake my head in frustration, and I'm really hoping this story gets ignored by everybody but us. So there you go. It's also from Industry Gamers. Headline, Call of Duty versus Battlefield. EA could grab first mover advantage. Call of Duty has been a massive entertainment event, setting new sales records for 2 years in a row. Publishers are sure to take note of the latest game in the blockbuster franchise to plan their own release schedules accordingly. The Activision having just announced a November 8 release date for MW3, one publisher in particular is likely to pay very close attention, EA. It's no secret EA is gunning to take back the shooter category and has designed Battlefield 3 to take down Call of Duty. The team at EA recently detailed its aggressive marketing plans to go up against Call of Duty this fall, which are going to fail miserably like they did last year with Medal of Honor. That's not in the story. And now that EA knows the release date of its main competitor in shooter space, the publisher could conceivably gain a first mover advantage if it can release Battlefield in October or even September. blah, blah, blah. For its part, EA told industry gamers that while competition does affect plans at times, EA wanted to wait until this year's E3 to reveal more about Battlefield 3. We unveiled the game at GDC. We have announced a fall ship date. We've been holding out for the next big beat, which is E3, blah, 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 blah. If I recall correctly, the release date for Battlefield 3 is actually after COD. Which is where it should stay, EA. This is my personal message to you, so pay attention. Do not be stupid. I do not want a Battlefield 3 that's not completely finished, rushed out in September because you're falling for Activision's bullshit. Let Modern Warfare 3 release. It's kind of like what I talked about in a written post the other day of all this, oh, we're going to do a marketing blitz. Who doesn't know about Battlefield 3 and COD at this point? If you don't, you probably don't play frickin' video games. And to be quite honest, here's what it comes down to for EA. You're going to have people like Glacinator and I who are going to buy Battlefield no matter what. You're going to have people like Patrick who are probably going to buy both. And then you're going to have people who will only buy COD. So, really, this whole the concept of taking down COD, EA, it bit you in the ass last year with Medal of Honor. It's going to bite you in the ass again this year if you try it with Battlefield. Although, I thought I'd read a release date of Battlefield. It was like, you know, November 11th or something like that. I thought they'd already talked about it. I'll look it up when I'm letting these guys talk. So, please don't pay any attention to this stupid bullshit. So, who cares what COD is doing? Okay, I feel better, slightly. Patrick, no. Glacinator. Care? Thoughts? Yeah. Patrick, I think that means it's your turn, but I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Glacinator's not too worried. I don't know. I mean, for what they're saying, they might want to attempt to release the game before Modern Warfare 3. I don't really care because, like you said, I'm in that category. I'm going to get both games. So it doesn't matter which one comes out first, in my opinion. I'll end up getting both eventually. Hopefully they don't fall within 2 or 3 days of each other so I can enjoy one, at least finish the single player or co-op or whatever in one, and then go into the single player of the next. So, for me, it doesn't really matter. I could see from a business standpoint, if Battlefield 3 is done, 100% done, and it's able to go gold, if they can get the jump now, maybe that convince some people to try it who wouldn't play it if they were playing Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. If they had Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 in their dirty little hands, they wouldn't give a crap about Battlefield, but if Battlefield came out first, maybe they would. I could see that, but only if the game, like you said, and you stressed this, if it's not 100% ready, 100% polished, if the servers aren't ready and the online isn't tested, they should not do this. But, hey, I don't really care. If it's good to go, if it's ready, they can, announce it, release it before Call of Duty. Doesn't bother me, really.
Well, it's not going to do them any good. And that's the thing, Glacinator. You can sit over there with the crickets, and that was hilarious as hell. But you have to be concerned a little bit that they're going to release it before it's 100% ready. So we're going to be stuck with more issues.
Sure. I mean, I don't want a rushed game, but I'm convinced enough that Battlefield 3 will be a superior game in every way to Call of Duty. So I really have no worries. I mean, I just don't. As long as they don't rush it, I don't care. They can release on the same day. As long as it's not rushed, it doesn't matter to me.
That's my biggest problem, is it's just, I'm like Glacinator. I'm sold on Battlefield 3, just don't rush it. Don't be stupid, EA. You know, I've said that's what really did in Medal of Honor. I mean, it wasn't a great game, it wasn't a stellar game, but it was a good game. And if it had not been released right up the ass of COD Black Ops, it probably would have done a lot better. More people would have got a chance to play it. You know, Patrick, is that true? Would you have been more willing to give Medal of Honor a chance if it had not been released?
Yep. Oh, definitely. It was also the, Halo Reach was still reasonably fresh. And wasn't it? There was something else. There was more than just one game. There was, I know there were three games that I was interested in, and I took two out of three, and the one that I didn't
Halo had been released 2 months before.
It must have been something else. What else was there? There was something. Because I remember there were three games. Maybe I was just thinking in that, within that 2 or 3 month period, there were three shooters, and I only really needed two. And yeah.
Yeah, that's how it worked. It was Halo. Yeah. You went Halo and Black Ops, and I went all three.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, oh, definitely. If it was in, especially if it was a time like in the middle of the summer, sometimes there aren't great games or something like that, I would have given it a shot. Yeah.
There you go. Please, EA. Just don't do it. Just, if you got a plan in place for Battlefield, just use it. And as you can tell, you know, that's, I mean, literally, folks, I started Monday morning and this was the best news I could come up with. I mean, hey, if you in the listening audience got news stories you want us to talk about, friggin' email them in. Be my guest. God, I can't wait for E3. But our final news story, I'm hoping to have a little fun with, because I saw this and I heard about this on Twitter a couple times, and I went, huh. Basically, Teak Games is hinting at and then has announced that they are in development of making a Child's Play game. Not the charity. The horror movie. You know, Chucky, the little red doll. There's some people kind of questioning whether they should be doing this because they've done mostly, casual PC games at this point. But I don't know why, folks, I can't tell you, but I kind of want to see what this is going to turn out like. Partially because it could end up being like a Deadly Premonition where it's so out there and so goofy and so last generation that it turns out to be a really fun game to play. And partially because those Chucky movies scared the ever-loving hell out of me. I hated that little bastard. I still can't watch those movies. Patrick, what are your thoughts on Child's Play?
Child's
the
Play
video
game.
Well,
the movies themselves never really scared me too much. They got funnier and funnier as they went on. My favorite Chucky movie, I didn't see all of them, was, what the hell is it? The Bride of Chucky. I don't know which number that is. I'm not a Chucky expert. But
I think that was close to the end, and yeah, you're right. I apologize for interrupting, but I do need to correct myself. The first two did actually scare me. As someone who does not get scared very much in horror films, something about him, and just something about the way they placed him like a doll, just creep me out. But yeah, by the time you got to Bride of Chucky, which I have seen, you were more like laying on the floor laughing at this shit.
Yeah. It became sort of a comedy slash horror one, which I liked that better. I thought it was hilarious. The best line in that movie, Chucky's having sexual intercourse with his female doll, and she looks at him and says, "Oh, Chucky, are you wearing a rubber?" And he looks at her and goes, "Baby, I am rubber."
There's the little fucker right there.
But, I don't know. I looked a little, I kind of breezed through this article. There's a few things. You know, the person who created Chucky and did the movies has absolutely nothing to do with this game. Also, the voice of Chucky is, so far at least, has nothing to do with this game. So those are two important factors about this Chucky series. I mean, the person who created it, who made the stories, who made it funny near the end, and the voice. I mean, it's almost like Optimus Prime without Optimus Prime's voice, you know? The last horror movie game, survival game that I can think of was a flop. It was Saw and Saw 2. Didn't play them, but when you're getting review scores of around a 2 out of 10 at times, it's not a good sign. I would love to see this come out and be hilarious and fun. I just don't think it's going to turn out that way, unfortunately.
Young Glacinator, you've got a Chucky soundboard. Have you actually ever watched the Chucky movies, and would you want to play a Child's Play game?
No, I've actually never seen a Chucky movie. Now it's thundering and lightning outside. It's kind of creepy.
Oh.
Wow, that was a good one.
No, I'm not joking. It really is.
No, I meant that. I know that's real. I can tell. We can hear it.
So, I don't know. He kind of freaks me out a lot. So I probably wouldn't play it. That's me being a pussy, so.
Even as a video game, though, I mean, I understand, because the first one did scare me. I just didn't like it, because they like sat him there as this creepy porcelain doll. And of course, I don't like clowns and I don't like porcelain dolls either. So hate clowns.
I hate clowns. So
even if you could play as him going around stabbing people.
No.
Okay. So that's two babies and a, eh. And he's about to get electrocuted because apparently he's recording outside the house. Patrick, I don't know if you really need the creator involved because they were such cheese shtick, but I'm kind of with you that you kind of need that, I can't even pronounce his name, Brad Dourif involved. You need the guy who voiced Chucky at the very least, I think. And we lost Patrick or he didn't have anything to add to that.
No, cricket noise. I need the cricket noise.
Yeah. I think you need at least, there's enough material to mine from the
game. Oh yeah. If it
game.
Was done fun and humorously, it might be good, but if they tried to make it into like a survival horror game, I think it would fail. Much
so
like Saw series.
So you'd rather see it humor then.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you
I think
the gore,
that would be
keep
better.
The blood, but funny. Yeah.
Yeah, and the last couple three, there was one, the one before Bride of Chucky was pretty damn funny too and had a lot of funny one-liners in it. I mean, it still had the horror, but it was more of like a horror comedy. Didn't they make a Friday the 13th game for one of the consoles too?
Oh, probably, yeah. I didn't play it.
I vaguely recall.
There was Nightmare on Elm Street on the NES.
Was there?
Was there? Okay, I didn't know about that, but, well, if you're a fan of Chucky, you may want to check into it. Maybe we'll get lucky and it'll,
Hey, that was one of the, catchphrases for Bride of Chucky. Chucky gets lucky.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Maybe Chucky will get lucky and he'll get a game, and maybe you'll get lucky and it'll be a good game. And there was a Friday the 13th, an action adventure video game for the NES. You played as one of the six camp counselors in a side-scrolling perspective adventure, apparently trying to kill Jason eventually. I vaguely recall playing that a little bit. It looked a little bit like Harvest Moon, only with a psycho with a fucking hockey mask and an axe. Yeah, look it up on Wikipedia. It's right at the 13th.
Harvest Moon ever. My goodness.
That's kind of what it looks like. If you look at the screenshot here, and I vaguely recall
I'm
maybe
farm my some stuff. La la la.
Yeah, that's really kind of what it looks like. And you have to save children and all this other crap. I don't know. That would be a fun. That'd be a fun. Fun for somebody to pick up and review, do like an old time review on Friday the 13th, the NES game. But on that charming note, that has been news. It's only a couple more weeks, folks. Please keep downloading and listening to the show until we get to E3, and then we should be okay. Also, keep downloading and listening because we have a new feature. It is called the Gunsage Rant. We are giving Gunsage an opportunity to give us a 5 to 10 minute rant on any subject of his choice. If you do not particularly like what he has to talk about or what he has to say, take it up with him. Neither myself, Patrick, or Glacinator have anything to do with this. We are not responsible. He just sends me the rant. I plug it into the show. This is a new feature we're trying because we've kind of made Glacinator the permanent third musketeer, at least for the summer. So have a listen. See what you think. Gunsage Rant.
Hello, fine listening audience. Well, this is Gunsage yet again. I have a very nice little rant for you. Today's rant will be over piracy and the gray area that is buying video games. Now, a lot of us simply go to GameStop or wherever, and we pick up the video game that we want or might be interested in or what have you, and we put money down, and we buy the game, and that's really all it goes to. But there are those of us that would instead simply go ahead and download the game for free. Now, obviously, when you're confronted with these two options, you have the opportunity for buying, well, stealing something, rather, or paying full price, a grand total of $60 fucking, plus whatever tax may apply in your state. Most of us, from an outsider's glance, would probably say, you know what, $60 is a bit excessive. I think that's a bit much. I don't think I want to pay that. But there's a problem, and this problem has hurt the gaming industry. This problem alone has helped shape what the game industry is today, as far as what's wrong with it. Now, I can't say that piracy alone has shaped the game industry, but it has helped in a negative way, of course. You see, the problem is that kind of mentality of, well, I'll just go ahead and fucking download it for free. Why the fuck not? Well, you know, who are the people that are most likely to do that? College students. Or just someone who has access to a computer who's fucking lazy. They don't feel like going ahead and buying the game legitimately. They don't feel like doing the right thing and paying the actual game companies. They just want to fucking play the game. That's all they want to do. They want to play the game. They want to see if it's any good or not, because they don't feel like it's not even really going to be that great of a game. So whatever, right? Well, here's the problem. It doesn't matter if the game is good or not. I mean, sure, if the game is a piece of crap, okay, well, that makes sense. But here's the thing. You don't know whether a game's good or not until you play it. And then once it's good, what are you going to do? Stop playing it? Destroy the fucking file you have and go out and buy it? No. You know exactly what you're going to do. You're going to play the game. You're going to beat the game. You're going to say, wow, that was a great game. Then you're going to uninstall it and forget about it. Do-do-do. Just go along your fucking business. And nobody's going to be none the wiser, right? Well, you know, at the end of the day, it's that kind of boneheaded move on your part that's hurt the game industry. That's put the game industry where it is right now, which is in a shitload of fuck. You see, the problem is that you can try to justify it as often as you like. Going ahead and illegally downloading games serves to do nothing more than hurt the industry. So you might be able to justify it by saying, well, I'm going to go ahead and download this illegally. I'm going to see if I like it or not. And if I like it, I'm going to go ahead and buy it. Here's the problem. The problem is, as soon as you download that illegally, you are making a pact with yourself. You are saying, I'm going to go ahead and download this illegally. I'm going to go ahead and play it illegally. And then, guess what? Even if the game is good, I'm not going to give the developer their fucking money. I'm just going to go ahead and play the game, and then I'm going to fuck off and go ahead and shove shit up my ass. The fact is, whenever we adopt an attitude that we can just go ahead and download a game, we can go ahead and not fucking pay for it, we are no better than common thieves. I want to repeat that again for anyone that has not understood this. We are no better than common thieves whenever we download games illegally, and that's it. That's all we fucking do. We don't say, hey, this game is actually a good game. I'm going to go ahead and spread it around all my friends. They're going to buy it legally, and I'm going to go ahead and donate to the site, and I'm going to go ahead and buy it legally, and I'm going to go ahead and comment in their forums, and I'm going to do this and that and the other and everything else. No, you're not going to fucking do that. You know you're not going to fucking do that. All you're going to do is you're going to go ahead and download it legally, and you're going to leave it at that. That's not good enough. That's not going to keep those kinds of games in the industry. Now, Alpha Protocol is not a very good game. So you know what I did? I waited 6 fucking months. I heard all the negative press, and then I said, you know what, I don't really care if it's a bad game. I want to try it out. It's a game that I've been looking forward to. Maybe it's not that bad. Maybe it isn't. I'm going to take a gamble, and I'm going to buy it. And you know what, I bought it for $30 fucking, and I liked it. There are so many technical problems with the game, and yet I liked it. And you know what, if I didn't like it, oh well. It was what the game was, and the fact that I wanted to support what they were trying to do. Now, let me talk about buying decisions for a second. When a game first comes out, that is when it is most critical for the game. If it's a game that you know that you're going to like, or at least the ideas behind it you like, then it's a game that you really should be buying if you can buy it. If you can't buy it when it first comes out, well, okay, but don't illegally download it. There are plenty of trailers on the internet. There are plenty of gameplay videos. There's all this different stuff. You can wait. You can wait. The game's not going anywhere. You don't have to worry about it. It's not like fucking the 90s with Atlas or whatever, where suddenly you're never going to find that game again, and by the time you do, you're going to pay $200 for it. That's not the way this shit works anymore. There's no possibility of that happening ever again. Let me be frank. Are you having a hard time finding a game for the 360? Then you're not looking hard enough. At the end of the day, there will never be a situation ever again where there is a, quote, rare game. It will not happen from any game that was released from, I want to say, 2005 onward. Even the games that were really good that were released in, say, 2006, you're going to find them. It's not that big of a deal. I thought maybe Persona 3 or Persona 4 or something might become, you know, hard to find. No, they're not hard to find. You can find them pretty easily. It's not that big of a deal. The reason why piracy hurts the industry is because how is the industry supposed to detect that that's what's popular? You're not paying the industry any money for this shit. You're not showing the industry what you really want. Besides, you know, what is the top pirated game of year X? And really, that doesn't help the industry. That just shows them what is more easily pirated. You know, if anything, that's going to hurt the single-player experience because there's all this DRM and bullshit that requires you to be online at the same time, which means games like Amnesia will fail to exist over time. You know, games that have a solid single-player experience don't need, don't want, don't have a multiplayer experience. They're going to fail to exist over time because they're not going to be financially successful because they're going to be more easily pirated. What's the point? Just think about it. The next time you think about downloading a game illegally, think about what you're doing. Think about how it's going to impact the industry. You can't justify it by saying it's just one sale. How are they going to seriously be impacted? How are they going to be crippled that much from one sale? It doesn't matter. It doesn't fucking matter. Just think about it next time. That's all for now.
And that was the Gunsage rant. Hope you liked it. If you didn't, as I said, we're not responsible for it. Take it up with Gunsage. That pretty much takes us out of the show. So, Patrick, why don't you do your spiel? Oh, wait.
Shut up.
I forgot. Patrick's not going to do his spiel. Stop. Hit pause on the recorded thing you use every week. Claysonator wants to give a shout-out. And we do that on occasion when people ask for them. So, take it away, Claysonator.
Yes, I have three quick shout-outs I'd like to give to both good guys I play Battlefield Bad Company 2 with. They are Vlad Dracula, The Walrus 504, and Up Your Poo Hole, spelled like it's in Spanish. they wanted a shout out, and they also wanted to send a message to everyone to play Battlefield Bad Company 2 because there's no one that plays it anymore, apparently. So, yep. Hope you like the podcast, guys.
What's up, guys?
What's going on, guys? None of them ever got Vietnam. You guys all stuck with the original Battlefield?
Only me and my brother have Vietnam. Vietnam.
Maybe one night we'll hop on there. We can get a giant party going where we're all on opposite
the same
teams.
That'd be pretty cool.
Or set up a private match like 4-on-4, do something silly like that. We get enough guys. We got at least 3 or 4 guys that have it. If you want to put up with Carlos. I didn't say that. Okay. We need to end this sucker. Now it's your turn, Patrick. Do your thing.
Alrighty. Well, let's check out wonderpodonline.com. That is our website. That is where you can download the showed MP3 file if you wish. Check out our RetroPod podcast is up there as well. And there's lots of other stuff from our very own Gunsage, who has this new segment in the show. He's got lots of articles up there. Lots of trailers seems to be the latest thing to do for hits, and it works. So why not? Up there, so at wonderpodonline.com, that is our blog. Of course, if you're listening to the show, you might have got us off of iTunes. If not, why don't you subscribe to iTunes? You can also listen to the show on Apple TV if you really want to. And we're on Facebook. We've been screwing around on Facebook now during the podcast. We got a few questions now and then, a few comments. That's great. Join us. You're never going to believe our Facebook name. It's amazing. It's WonderPod Online. That's right. Look it up. I knew that blew you away with originality. WonderPod Online. We got some stuff on YouTube if you want to look at older episodes of the show. Highlight reel. What else do we got? I think that's about all I can remember. We do have an email address, so if you want to send us hate mail, love mail, nude pictures of yourself, what is the email address, Mr. Bruce McGee?
Thanks. Now we're going to have a bunch of nude pictures of dudes. But still, the email address is wonderpodonline@gmail.com. Wonderpodonline@gmail.com. Until episode 66, if we're still here, Lord, E3 needs to show up. I'm Bruce McGee. I'm out of here. See ya.
Goodbye.
I sent him into the future.
See you later.
Okay.